You're listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast.
You're listening to episode 477, and I'm your co-host, Brittany Martin.
And I'm your co-host, Gemma Israel.
Listeners, you're in for a real treat today because this type A host has decided not to plan this episode at all. Instead, we're lucky to be joined by Kevin Newton to chat about all the things. I'm sure YARP is going to come up. But if you need to catch up on the greatness that is Kevin, check out episode 385 in the show notes.
Breaking news. And we actually have some news to share hot off the press. Kevin, do you want to let us know what just happened? Not even 15 minutes ago?
Not even 15 minutes ago. We just merged mirroring the Ruby YARP repository into Ruby Ruby. So YARP is officially on Ruby Head. And if you download and install Ruby Head right now, you can require YARP and use the new parser. We're very excited.
Oh my God, that is such exciting news. I'm just, wow, what an exclusive. Like
So fresh.
Okay, so just to recap for the listeners, like what version will we see this in and how can they immediately download it and start playing with it?
Right, so YARP, the yet another Ruby parser, is going to be released with Ruby 3.3 as a library. It won't be the official Ruby parser. We're going to spend a year making sure it's, you know, buffing it, cleaning it up, making sure it's as perfect as possible before the future of it is decided. But in Ruby 3.3, you'll be able to require YARP and you'll have a Ruby constant and all kinds of methods that are available to you. YARP.parse or parse file can get you a syntax tree. And people are going to be able to use it as the basis of libraries like formatters or linters or really any other static analysis tools. You can use it today if you want by installing the latest Ruby master, which I think you can do with Ruby install or various other tools. I think RVM or any of those other tools can all install from Head. So if you download and install it, even right now, you can go and play around.
So for each of you, I'm so curious, what is the next thing to do now? Are you going to start testing this at Shopify? Have you been testing it? I'm curious, Gemma, what are you doing next?
Yeah, so we've been doing some pretty thorough testing the whole way through. We needed to get approval to mirror it in, and we wanted to make sure it was in shipshape before mirroring it in. And so I think we downloaded every Ruby gem in existence, and I think we're correctly parsing like 99.998% of all of the files in all of the Ruby gems. So like I said, yeah, we've been testing a ton. Next step for me is going to be to keep working on this integration. So everything is parsed into a parsed tree now. And I'm going to look at taking that tree and making it into instruction sequences so that Ruby can actually act on the output of the tree.
It feels like a Drew Bragg game show question. Was it Noko Giri that was the problem gem out of all of them? No,
actually, Noko Giri's syntax is not difficult to parse. There are some weird ones. It's all in very small edge cases. We're down to something like 350 files out of 2.8 million. So we're very, 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 very close.
That's so exciting. And then Gemma, what did I see on Twitter that you did some work around document moving? Tell me what you've been up to.
Oh, yeah. This was something unrelated to the parser that I've been working on recently. Is there used to be a Ruby wiki on bugs.rubylang.org, which is where you would go to file any issues you might have with Ruby. There was also a wiki attached, but it was kind of out of date and very limited in terms of who could actually edit it and keep it up to date. So recently migrated that over to GitHub. So now anyone can go and add things to the Ruby wiki and it should be much more accessible and readable and usable. And in the migration, managed to do a lot of deleting of old documentation. So that was nice.
That must have felt amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Definitely pleased with that and really, really pleased with YARP. I think we've made a lot of good progress there.
Kevin, how did you manage to get that merged during your paternity leave? First of all, congratulations on the new baby, but like, how did all that timing line up?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. Before leave, Gemma and I were working really hard because basically at the beginning of my leave, Ruby Kaigi happened. So right before my leave started, Gemma and I were trying to make it so that we were 100% green on all the test targets that we had specified. So making sure that generated equivalent syntax trees, making sure that it generated equivalent Lex output, which you can check with Ripper. And we were pushing pretty hard to get to that point. Then once we got to that point, it was literally like 2 days before I went on my paternity leave. Then I went on my paternity leave and Gemma kept the ball rolling and went to Ruby Kaigi and talked to them. And there was a dev meeting the day before Ruby Kaigi started. And there, Mats agreed to accept it as a library in Ruby 3.3. And then I came back at the beginning of June. And honestly, if it weren't for Windows, we would have had this merge 2 weeks ago. But we didn't have a CI pipeline available set up for Windows. And so we had all kinds of annoying failures, especially on like old C compilers that don't support the C99 spec as well as they should on old versions of Windows, which is just an annoying technical detail. But we worked through those. And yeah, I'm very happy it's in now, because now we have a week and a half to finish out any kind of issues that are related to merging it. And then I'm going to go back on leave for a month and Gemma is going to keep working on compilation. So it's the timing has worked out relatively well, all things considered.
Yeah, timing worked great. And we're pretty excited to, Kevin's been working a bunch with other Ruby implementations that'll be able to use it as well. So the headline thing, because it's so hot off the press, is this mirroring into C Ruby. But we've also been working really closely with JRuby and Truffle Ruby and Sorbet, and are excited for a bunch of other tools that developers use in their day-to-day to be able to use YARP soon as well.
So I'm curious, you know, Shopify came out with YJIT as well. And I feel like there's been like a whole marketing arm of just convincing people to like, hey, use YJIT, like it's great. Do you feel like there's going to end up having to be like a marketing push around YARP in order to get its like overall adoption?
Yes and no. It depends very much on if YARP becomes the default parser in Ruby, which is another complicated question. Fundamentally, the current parser in C Ruby is very difficult to maintain. It's written in a 14,000 line grammar file. Grammar files themselves are somewhat difficult to understand and not very well understood concept in general, because they're difficult to read. Overall, in the history of C Ruby, there haven't been too many contributors to the parser, partly because it's a very, very complicated grammar. Ruby has one of the most complicated grammars of any modern programming language and makes it difficult to parse. So the existing parser uses something called LR parsing. I'm going to try not to go too deep into this because I could talk about this for hours, but let's just give it the high level. The current Ruby parser uses LR parsing or LALR parsing, which is two different flavors of the same thing, but they're generated parsers. YARP is not that. YARP is a handwritten recursive descent parser. Handwritten recursive descent parsers have a much, much higher level of power. They can parse anything because they're just a program. And ambiguities in the grammar are resolved because you're just making function calls. So there's a little bit less of a formalism established with it. There's less academic backing to it because an LR parser is very well understood, very well studied. Handwritten recursive descent parsers are just programs, so they have less formalism behind them. So there's kind of this trade-off where what we want is a maintainable parser with tons of error tolerance, very maintainable, very portable to other runtimes, and very performant. The trade-off that we've been discussing a lot with CRuby is, what does maintainability mean in this case? And it's a very ambiguous question. Like, maintainability is a difficult thing to define. And Mats and others in the CRuby core team are nervous about merging something that might not be as maintainable. The issue is, how do you define maintainability? And that's something we're still in talks with them now. So to answer your overall question, we think this is the way forward, and we're very excited about this parser, and lots of tools are already using it, and lots more tools are going to be using it, especially as a core library in 3.3. I'm going to switch over syntax tree to using it. RubyLST will therefore start using it. We're going to build branches on the parser gem that they can use it. So there is going to be a lot of adoption of this, but in terms of it actually being used in CRuby, that's kind of up for discussion, and we're trying to figure out the best path forward. So yeah, that was a very long-winded answer. Gemma, you want to help me out?
The other point I would make is, in terms of comparison to YJIT, they're slightly different in that one of our goals in rewriting the parser was to really unify all of the parser implementations. So there, I think Kevin can correct me here, but I think 12 or so, maybe more, different parser implementations that different tools and gems and implementations are using. And the goal of YARP was to really have one in the end. Our hope is that it's not a choice that a developer is making at any point, that it's just their tools are all using YARP, that eventually in Ruby 3.4 or even further down the line, YARP is the default parser. And based on that, it's not something we need to market at all, right? It's just that downstream Ruby developers will see the benefits, right? They'll see clearer error messages. They'll see all of their tools really up to date, significantly faster than they were before. All these kind of benefits without having to make any decisions about what's being parsed or anything like that.
Thanks to Honeybadger, I have all kinds of sources to back what I'm about to say next. The number one reason startups fail is that they run out of money. There are so many ways for startups to lose money. Downtime certainly should not be one of them. Recent studies found that downtime can cost $427 per minute for small businesses and up to $9,000 per minute for medium-sized businesses. That's every single minute that you're down. A monthly subscription with Honeybadger helps you prevent costly downtime by giving you all the monitoring you need in one easy-to-use platform so you can quickly understand what's going on and how to fix it, which of course helps you stay in business. Best of all, Honeybadger is free for small teams and setup takes as little as 5 minutes. Get started today at honeybadger.io. That is honeybadger.io. Thanks to Honeybadger for supporting the show.
So is the goal maintainability or speed for YARP? Overall, is it that famed migration where I don't notice that something's changed, but now something is more maintainable and it's more accessible to contribute to? Or are you actually trying to aim for performance too?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So there's a lot of different angles on that. The only user-facing, but the only thing you're going to notice when YARP becomes the default parser, if and when, is syntax errors should get significantly better. So you should be able to see error recovery. You should be able to see, for instance, right now, if you're looking in your editor and you have some kind of VS Code extension or really any editor extension, you only typically are going to get one error at a time. And the red squiggles, this is why I always talk about the red squiggles. So you're only going to typically get one. But with YARP, you can see all of the syntax errors at once because we can recover from the syntax errors, assume what you meant, and continue on. So we're working very, very, very hard on making those messages as clear as possible. And actually, Adam Hess at GitHub is currently, like literally 10 minutes ago, I was talking to him about what he's working on with regard to making those error messages even better and more structured. You can think more like some of the error messages might get in Rust or Elm or TypeScript. You can get really good error messages, and we want that for Ruby. But under the hood, yeah, we're definitely aiming for better performance, better memory consumption. As a handwritten parser, you can get a lot more control over speed because you're not relying on the algorithm to generate you an efficient parser. The other thing is generated parsers rely on jump tables. And this is just something kind of in the weeds, but a lot of jump table stuff that is generated makes it difficult for modern compilers to use some of their more heavy optimization. Things like inlining, things like processor pipelining instructions, branch prediction, all of these kind of get flummoxed by jump tables. And there are ways around it, but we haven't really been doing that in CRuby historically. And so having a parser that has small functions, even just being able to put a breakpoint in a function and go and inspect what's actually happening makes things a lot more maintainable. So the answer to your question is error messages are going to be the user-facing side. You'll notice that. But yeah, we're hopefully also going to make it much faster performance, which the only other piece of it you'll see is startup time on a CLI. If you're running a Ruby CLI or just running like Ruby-E or something like that, hopefully that should be faster because it'll parse things more quickly.
So Gemma, like the last time we talked, I think you were just onboarding to help Kevin. How was it like getting into his mind in terms of like where he was going? Because you've been thinking about this for years, Kevin. I mean, we have evidence of it. How was that for you?
Yeah, it's been good. Parsing is definitely not a problem I had spent much time thinking about until now. And I think something fun about it is it's kind of different than the problems I was previously working on in CRuby. And so thinking about a new landscape and a new world, YARP is pretty well documented, and Kevin was very helpful onboarding me onto it. I think the combination of those things and it just being a relatively straightforward thing to contribute to have helped me a bunch. And so, yeah, I feel really confident in this code base now, and it's fun to be able to contribute to another part of CRuby in this way.
You know, the old images when we were growing up of like someone winning the Super Bowl and they're like, what are you going to do next? And they're like, I'm going to go to Disneyland. So I'm curious for you, Kevin. This is something that you've been working on for so long, and I imagine the work does not stop with it getting merged in. But are there any other problems that are like tickling your brain now that you're like getting closer on YARP? What are you thinking?
Oh, so many. So many. I could fill hours talking about this. So yeah, once the parser is switched over, I hope it becomes the main parser. I think we can do some really interesting things with error messages. We can start to provide structured error messages. Right now, all the tools that rely on error messages just parse the message coming out of them. A syntax error is raised, you call .message and you get a certain message. You can't access the line number or the column information. It's just a string. So you have to parse it out somehow. That makes it very difficult on downstream tools to provide like a good experience. So I want to provide syntax errors that have actual objects associated with them. You can go and find the tree node. You can go and have like really good diagnostic information. And you can also ask the parser, hey, why did this error get thrown? Oh, well, I was trying to parse this and this wasn't here. So I tried this and that and the other thing. So really get a good idea of what is happening. This is a barrier to entry. Error messages are the first thing that a newbie finds. Like syntax errors are the first experience you had because you make syntax errors when you don't know the language. So I think there's a lot we can do in that respect. I think there's a lot we can do going forward on other tooling, right? Syntax Tree already exists and it has a bunch of tools that no one is really using right now because they're very, I don't know, I need to write more documentation. But Syntax Tree is going to live on top of YARP as another layer of functionality. And I think we can do some really interesting things. So now that the parser is going to be merged, we have to go and write the compiler for the YARP AST to become the instruction sequences, as Gemma said. I think we can do more things. As YARP was a re-envisioning of the syntax tree, I think we can also re-envision the compiler a bit, where the compiler right now is a template-based compiler, which means it finds certain nodes, it outputs certain instructions. It doesn't do any kind of higher level optimizations or doesn't do any kind of large sweeping looks at what it is compiling. It does people optimization. So it will do like one or two instructions at a time. It will change some patterns, but we could use some things like data flow graphs and try to walk those to make them more efficient. I think we could generate more efficient YARP instructions in general. In general, it does a pretty good job, but if you look at the instructions generated by pattern matching, for example, you can have like 50 some odd instructions that don't ever need to get generated. So there's a lot with that. Yeah, just in general, static analysis tooling and all other kinds of things, having the parser the same is going to make all of that possible. And I'm really excited about the future that comes out of that.
I agree. There's been so many services that have come forward and been like, we have solved error tracking in Ruby. And you're right. You only can work with what you've been given. It would be fascinating to see that because like how quickly will those tools adjust to having that additional information? Gemma, I don't think we've ever talked about this, but what do you use as your code editor?
I use Vim. I'm ashamed to say I should use VS Code. I know, but I don't.
I'm a RubyMine user. So I think we, what do you use, Kevin?
I used TextMate for the first 8 years of programming Ruby. And then when I joined Shopify, I switched to VS Code. And it was like, I still love TextMate, very special place in my heart. And it starts up faster than anything because it's just a text editor. I mean, but no, VS Code has definitely taken over for me for pretty much everything. It's just got a lot of stuff. And now that I've written numerous VS Code plugins, it's pretty much got my heart until some other better thing comes along.
The common pattern for me is every backend developer that I talk to, they use a different code editor. There's at least like 20 out there that people are using. Every single React developer I talk to is VS Code. It's just like, it's very understood. It's so weird. I'm curious if they included that as a question in the Stack Overflow survey, but it's just understood that if you do React, you must use VS Code.
Well, it's funny you say that because my last gig, I did a ton of React and switching to VS Code made me realize like, oh yeah, there's a very good reason that people that write TypeScript use this. The integration is very slick.
So then the plan, Gemma, you're going to stay on YARP for a bit to work on the compiler, and then you'll eventually roll off onto another project?
We haven't really planned that far out, I would say. The compiler should take a little while and then cleaning up kind of loose edges around YARP. And then, as Kevin said, it'll ship with Ruby 3.3, but I'm sure we'll still do a lot in response to that. So that brings us already into earlier midway through next year that I should be on YARP-related activities. I also am pretty excited. One more thing that we didn't mention is being able to analyze code patterns. So because YARP's tree is so good and so thorough, we should be able to do things like scrape GitHub and create kind of ASTs of Ruby code that exists and look at code usage patterns and then potentially even use that to inform development on Ruby or some optimizations we can do on Ruby itself. Kevin mentioned some on the compiler, but there are other ways we can do that. Like even something like object shapes, when we were trying to determine, say, the average number of instance variables per class or max number of instance variables per class, we had access to Shopify's code bases pretty quickly, but other code bases, there wasn't really good tooling to pull down and look at syntax that was actually in the wild and what was there. And with something like YARP, we should be able to do that a lot more effectively. So hopefully at some point next year, I would be really curious to look into that as well.
This episode is also brought to you by Scout APM. Scout is an industry leader in application performance monitoring. This low overhead tool is designed to help Ruby developers find and fix performance issues. Scout's intuitive UI and tracing logic ties bottlenecks to specific lines of code and allows you to quickly pinpoint and resolve issues like N+1 queries, slow database queries, memory bloat, and more. Scout's unlimited seats and applications allow teams to collaborate without additional costs and makes it easy for any member of your team to become a performance pro. See for yourself why developers worldwide call Scout their best friend with a free 14-day trial, no credit card needed. As a special offer for Ruby on Rails listeners, Scout will donate $5 to the open source project of your choice when you deploy. Learn more at scoutapm.com/RubyOnRails.
If you could skip parsing my repositories from when I was in boot camp, I would really appreciate it. It's all in ERB and it is rough looking. I love having the artifacts there, but that is super interesting. I think being able to pick up those patterns and being able to run like surveys and just being able to learn from the community would be super fascinating.
But even like Kevin said, YARP being really helpful to beginners, people coming from Python, we see are using a specific pattern over and over again that works and is valid syntax in Ruby, but isn't really a common pattern. We could definitely build tooling that would say something like, hey, like this pattern is syntactically fine. This is a much better, more kind of Ruby pattern and make improvements from there. There's a lot you could do with a cleaner parser.
Yeah, I actually have got a live example for that right now. At Shogun, our senior QA person is going to cross over and become a junior Ruby developer. And so she only knows Python. So I expect to see some very Python-like Ruby from her at first. So that would be really interesting because that we talk about learning from other communities, but it's hard. So being able to automate that would be really fascinating.
All of this gets really interesting when you add in like AI. I know it's in the zeitgeist right now, but there's a lot of ways that we could train a model on tokens generated by the Lexer coming out of YARP. And we could do things not like Copilot, not like predictive text, but like predictive in terms of error messages, as in we expected this here and the model says that the real code continues here. So we can start to like integrate much more advanced tooling into that kind of space, which would be really interesting.
So this is a really easy question, but, and I'm sure you've covered it before, Kevin, but where did the name come from? Because it's so like tongue in cheek.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wanted a different name for the parser for a long time and one never came up. No, so I guess it's a thing now. This is the third one I know of, but when Ruby was 1.8, it was a tree walk interpreter. And then Koichi Sasada for his master's thesis came up with YARV, yet another Ruby virtual machine. And that kind of transformed how Ruby operated. And that got merged. And then YJIT was either yet another JIT or YARV JIT, depending on who you ask. And that got merged. So I was thinking, you know, I really want this to get merged. So maybe I should just name it yet another Ruby parser. And it appeared to work. And actually, there was a very nice guy that I communicated with who previously had a YARP gem who just gave me ownership over it so he can publish the gem, which was very kind. So we have that now as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. Did you reach out or did they reach out to you?
Yeah, I reached out to him and I said, hey, and I saw he had like 20 some odd gems. And I was like, hey, can I have this please? And he's like, yeah, sure, absolutely. That was very kind, very in the spirit of Ruby being welcoming. That was very nice of him.
We don't need our own left pad incident within the Ruby community. So right. I appreciate that very much.
Did he say why he had YARP specifically? Like it's not really a word.
I think it was yet another RPC protocol with the previous one.
Nice.
Okay. So people out there building fun things.
Nice. Cool.
So on a previous episode, Gemma walked the audience through like what it took to get object shapes merged and like the thread that was open. And I'm just curious, something that as big as YARP, did that really start out as a discussion item? Because I imagine that discussion item is probably pages and pages long. Or is it so big that it ended up being like an internal discussion with the Ruby core team?
Yeah. The development's history is a little bit interesting. So we started this last May, which is wild. But last May, we sat down and wrote a document that was, it ended up being like a 13-page document in a Google Doc. And I shared it internally and got some feedback on it, shared it with a couple of people externally, got more feedback. And this was the design document for what would become the parser. And then we shared it with CRuby. We shared it with Mats, Mame, Nobu, Koichi, a few others. And that was when we sat down with them and we said, hey, we'd really like to do this because we need better error messages because our developers, our people are coming into Ruby and they really need to have this experience. And the other real big problem was that teams at Shopify, but also just teams in the ecosystem, there are 12 actively maintained parsers and all of them are suffering anytime new syntax comes out. Ruby 2.7 pattern matching just absolutely killed productivity for a ton of different projects because they had to go and match a ton of new syntax. And that was really exhausting for a lot of people in the community. And you think about tools like Sorbet or Steep, or, well, Steep didn't have its own parser, but even that had to go and support that. Sorbet, or you think about even TreeSitter or JRuby, TruffleRuby, any of these other runtimes, they all have to go and update. So we were saying, look, these people are all having to deal with this. Let's just write one parser that everyone can use that has great error messaging. And they agreed. They said, this is great. We wanted handwritten recursive descent for a while. It was funny, there was a note in the 0.95 release of Ruby that said we want a handwritten recursive descent parser back in 1995. And so they agreed to that. And so every couple of months, we would check in on the progress. And eventually, it got to the point where we just brought it up at the dev meeting with just core Ruby and said, hey, we want to merge this in. And they agreed. So there wasn't a big, huge, long discussion because it still is a separate library. But I imagine that when it comes time to really pull the plug and say, this is going to become the new main parser, I think that will spark a severely longer discussion than the one that we currently have. Because right now it's still an optional library, not the default parsers. I think it'll be a very different kind of conversation.
So the last time Gemma was on, we talked about how the main parser is getting upgraded as well as YARP getting merged in. So Gemma, what's your take on the current situation there?
Yeah, so we're working pretty hard with members of the Ruby core team and Mats himself to establish some acceptance criteria to make it objective in order to be able to measure which parser should stay in Ruby. So although Kevin and I obviously both have some personal bias for YARP, our main goal is just for Ruby to have the best parser it can and for that to be one universal parser that any tool or implementation can use. And so really, like if we work with them and we establish acceptance criteria for what the parser should look like, what its error messages should look like, what kind of performance it should have, all of that, and YARP matches that and also a different parser matches that, I think Kevin and I would be happy with either thing. Our main goal here is to have parsing be better for the Ruby ecosystem. And so that's how we're going to hopefully see Ruby make that decision.
So if it becomes the default, does that mean like everybody goes through your boot camp and everyone becomes maintainers, or do you two like become de facto maintainers for YARP? Like what's the sustainable move here?
So Kevin and I will probably do the most YARP maintenance, I guess, but anyone would be able to push to it or things like that. The way it works right now in the mirroring, it's a standalone repository that gets mirrored in. So I think Kevin and I have merged on that. I'm not sure. Kevin, you can weigh in here. The way it works right now, YARP is a standalone repository under the Ruby namespace that gets mirrored back. So folks can make PRs to that YARP repository where Kevin and I both have admin access.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure if other members of CRuby have access, but it might change going forward. Obviously, one of our goals is maintainability. So whatever ends up working best is what we're going to do.
Is the goal for new default parser, whether or not it's a current one or YARP, to be chosen before 4.0?
Oh, definitely before 4.0. Yeah. It's difficult because money is involved. We work for Shopify. It's our full-time job to work on YARP right now. And it's difficult to justify if we're working on something that doesn't get used. Open source is so weird and maintaining open source is so weird. It's a difficult situation for everyone. But if we ended up working on this project for 2.5 years and then it got dropped, that would be difficult to justify. So we're trying to get acceptance criteria so that we can perform against it and make sure that we are building the correct thing. But we're also trying to get acceptance criteria to make a determination of if it's the right thing for us to be building. Because if the other parser is going to be used going forward, then we really should just be working on that parser. We shouldn't be duplicating efforts. So it's always difficult when money gets involved, but unfortunately, the reality.
I mean, that literally could be the title of the episode, but I completely agree with you. Money makes everything more complicated.
Yeah.
Now, before we wrap, do either of you want to plug anything before we wrap up the show?
I have nothing to plug.
Well, you know what? I want to hear, Gemma, about your RubyConf Thailand keynote. Have you decided what you're talking about?
Oh, I have not. I'm still.
This is real talk, though, because you got a lot going on. Merging major things into the Ruby mirror.
Hey, I'm trying to work through the timeline. So it's the talks in October. I think I want to like firmly have decided the topic at least within the next month or so, and then can get going working on it.
All right. Well, you come back here every 6 weeks. So the next time we talk to you, you're going to have that topic ready to go.
Yeah, that's some good accountability. I'll be able to give you the outline and everything.
Love it. What about you, Kevin?
I mean, it's been interesting the last couple months, especially the last year. We're spending my whole time in C. So it's funny because when you enter the Ruby ecosystem, you get a plethora of books and tutorials, and there's not so much for the C ecosystem. There's like 2 books that I can think of that are modern, but the rest of it is written in the 70s. So I guess I will say I'm currently finishing up this book by Robert Secord. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, called Effective C. And
oh, that's a pretty cover. I like that.
Yeah, it's got Cthulhu on the front. I love that. And yeah, it's been really good so far. There's just so many things that make C quite an adventure. It makes me appreciate Ruby a little bit more because C has the same problem that you have with like JavaScript, where it's dependent on the platform it's running on. In JavaScript, you have to worry about polyfills because you might be running on an older browser that doesn't have everything you support. Same thing with C. You might be running with a C compiler or a runtime that doesn't have functions that you expect it to have. So definitely some interesting challenges along the way. And it's been really fun digging into this side of the stack and just seeing how much we can learn through osmosis.
Well, you heard it here, listeners. 2024, Kevin Newton writes a book.
So. I don't know. You might be right. We'll see. We'll see.
I wouldn't be surprised. Get your pre-orders in now. Okay. Well, congratulations on the merge, both of you. This is extremely exciting news. Thank you for bringing this exclusive today. This timing worked out so great. This was supposed to be a chill conversation that we maybe touched upon YARP, and we definitely talked about YARP, but this was a lot of fun. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Thanks for recording.
You've been listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded to stay in the loop on Ruby on Rails and open source software. While you're at it, please leave us a review. And thank you for listening.